This is News in Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, has the president found a new way to govern and gifts for doing the right thing? Will this help those in poverty? Joining us today to discuss these topics and more from our bureau in New York City, Robert George. He's an editorial writer for the New York Post. Marcelo Suarez Orozco is co-director of immigration studies at New York University. He joins us from member station WLIU in Southampton, New York. And from the Harvard University studios in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Callie Crossley. She's a social commentator for the television show Beat the Press, which is seen in the Boston area. I thank you all for joining us. One of the things that we want to get to first and foremost, Robert George, is this idea of whether or not we're seeing a bit of a difference in terms of how the president is governing. We're hearing the issues and the backlash of the Guantanamo situation. We're seeing more violence alleged to be happening in Iraq by American soldiers. The whole idea, and we're hearing whispers that maybe the neocons in the White House and those who have the president's ear are losing favor with this president because he finds himself in such a quagmire that he really has been unable to free himself from.
Well, I think, Ed, it's a couple of different things. I mean, I think partly it's a case of making a virtue out of necessity. I think that regardless of what people feel about the decision to go into Iraq, it's something that it's done, and the troops are going to be staying there probably for some time, given the outbreak of violence over the weekend and the ongoing violence. What that means is that kind of limits the ability of military responses to some of these other issues that are going on, whether it's the resurgent Taliban in Afghanistan or whether it's the ongoing problems with Iran or North Korea. So that, in a sense, I think has forced the administration to use the phrase that they didn't want to use previously, to resort more to a realist version of foreign policy. That's why they're pushing a multilateral view.
All right, but what about North Korea? Forgetting the protections of the Geneva Convention? What about the idea that you have, if you believe these stories, if these stories are true, a military running amok?
Well, I don't know.
Foreign land, occupation, etc.
Yeah. Well, I don't necessarily think I want to say it's a military running amok. I mean, I think right now it's some isolated situations. I don't want to disparage the entire military, saying that that's completely the case. I think what the Supreme Court decision did demonstrate is, though, that that they are definitely going to, I think, have to follow more of the Geneva Conventions in terms of dealing with Al Qaeda. Whether that is such a good idea, because Al Qaeda is not an official military force, an official army, which the Geneva Convention says it is. However, the Geneva Convention says that those conventions are for official armies, which Al Qaeda is not. But I think that's the main reason why the administration, in a sense, feels it may be somewhat handcuffed by the Supreme Court, unless Congress gives it more freedom.
Marcelo, Robert brings up an interesting point, and that's the question of, and he almost sounds like an apologist that the White House would send out, forgive me, Robert, but the idea of giving Al-Qaeda a different line, if you will, the idea that this is not a true war, this is not a true enemy, it's a different fight.
Well, it's a true enemy. It is, in fact, a different fight, and the notion that we could create a reality like Guantanamo, that in some reports was ascribed within some of the groups advocating for its creation and maintenance as an out-of-space space, a space where no law would in a way constrain the range of options to the government, has of course now landed with the force of a meteor in the form of the Supreme Court decision about the limits in presidential power in conducting, from the legal point of view, the war on terror. So from the very beginning, we really knew that we were dealing with an enemy that would defy the traditional framework of war. War is two militaries fighting over national territory. That's a famous definition of war. This is not what we have now. We have a global network. We have independent contractors, in many cases, is the sense, that are working autonomously, that are working independently. And this creates a military context that is very, very different from the traditional paradigm of war that we've seen in World War II, that we've seen in Korea, that we've seen in Vietnam. This is a whole different game.
And I know you want to ask Cassie something about this, but I do want to underscore something, not just the fact that I'm not an apologist for the administration, but I do want to just underscore the fact that the focus in terms of Guantanamo and al-Qaeda in the context of the Geneva Conventions is the fact that the Geneva Conventions is supposed to, as Marcelo says, deal with armies that are flying under the flag of a specific country. And the administration has made the argument that al-Qaeda, because they are not connected to a specific state, they cannot be considered under the Geneva Conventions. And that is what the distinction is.
But Callie, this harkens back to the idea of the PLO and not recognizing something that is clearly there. And when I say a true enemy, obviously I mean in the sense of true being a traditional war enemy. The reality is, if you accept the idea that this is an enemy you're going after in a warlike state, which is what the president has deemed it, the war against terror, shouldn't all of this indeed come under that umbrella then?
Well, I think absolutely. I think where Robert was about to go was that if these are people that operate outside of conventions because they're not a part of a country, they're not fighting over territory, it's bigger than that to some degree, and so they're not constrained by how they respond, then why should, according to the president, why should we be confined and constrained in the way that we respond?
That's
we need to find the outer space.
But
that
war's
that
never
Marcelo
been that polite.
Was talking about.
War has never been that polite.
It's never been polite, but there have been some kinds of constraints among rules, global rules, that people have operated in. And I've always been concerned from the beginning. Yeah, I hear where he's saying that al-Qaeda is not the norm, okay? But if we operate in the way that goes against what we believe and what we have are on the record believing, what our law says, well, how do we expect people to treat our men and women when they are captured? I mean, that's what I don't understand. I mean, it's not just al-Qaeda at play here. It's the entire world. And so you have not only to demonstrate to the al-Qaedas, however you want to deal with them, but also to people who are in the rest of the world. How are we, America, going to stand up and follow the rules as they have been outlined?
This
all right, let me take
us.
Go ahead, Marcelo.
For a new paradigm, a paradigm that increasingly, it's increasingly obvious, will require of us an increasingly multilateral approach with a kind of ability to manage the flexibility, the ambiguities, the complexities that this new global security, counter-terrorist activities, if you don't want to call them warfare in the old-fashioned sense of the word, will require. We need a much greater ability to take the high ground, precisely for what Cal said. What are the consequences in terms of our soldiers when they become captured in this new world where the rules of war are not really applying?
Yeah, and more specifically,
and
if I could
just add something,
Marcelo, real quick though, Callie, the idea of what Marcelo suggests is that America being on the world stage, and as you suggested, the eyes of the world on us even more intently than ever before. Every step we take really has far and away more magnitude than it has in the past. Go ahead, Callie.
And then to be reminded because of this North Korea thing that superpower we may be, but we really need China and Japan to step up here and try to corral what's going on there. And so that means you have got to not be an isolationist. You have got to interact. And we're talking about a president, until he became president, who had not traveled outside of the country. Listen, I tell my 14-year-old niece and nephew that travel and learning about other people is broadening, and it informs your whole opinion and your perspective on it. That's why he's had to change his the way he's come at people, because he's realized, oh, this is a bigger deal than I thought. Mm-hmm. I can't sit in Washington and just sort of, you know, give the proverbial gunslinging talk and think that that's going to work. It's not.
All right. Let's take a trip to Michigan for a very heated governor's race there. The incumbent Democrat Jennifer Granholm is in a statistical dead heat with Dick DeVos, the Republican challenger there, a businessman from, I believe, the Grand Rapids area. Let's see what they've done here with a political action committee ad that was taken out in the Michigan Chronicle, which is the African-American newspaper in the Detroit area. Voice the Vote is the PAC. And the ad, full page, had a picture of Jennifer Granholm with also pictures of and images of Adolf Hitler and the swastika, criticizing Democratic leaders, including Clinton, going back as far as Johnson and Carter, talking about the Democrats taking African Americans for granted, and the fact that because this is the case, blacks should not vote Democratic this time around. The interesting point here, Callie, is no one really knows who this PAC is. No one really knows where this is coming from. Dick DeVos has denounced this ad, suggesting that there's no room for it here. But many believe that this is a Republican-based PAC pushing this. Anything wrong with that idea? Again, shades of Willie Horton in one sense here.
This is so appallingly foul. It's unspeakably foul. On so many levels. First of all, somebody has to know because they had to pay for the ad. So it seems to me a good investigative reporter can follow this back and figure out who paid for it. Okay, having said that, I think what is required here is a much stronger denunciation from Dick DeVos. I recognize that he may have nothing to do with this. I'm hoping that he doesn't. But the fact that there's somebody on his behalf speaking in this foul way means that he has to step up even higher and say, this is not how we're conducting a campaign. This is foul. This is inappropriate. All of the stuff that he needs to say. And I think it's really ironic at a time that some Republicans in leadership, including the guy who's the head of the Republican National Committee, are trying to make strides to use some really concrete, practical, attractive ways of getting blacks interested in the Republican Party and say, these are the reasons why you should not allow the Democratic Party to take you for granted. Then you have this kind of stuff, and it makes people say, well, wait a minute now. What's going on here? This is the real Republican Party. These are the real folks. And that's why we black people are not interested in what they may have to offer in terms of programs and platforms.
Just
so it's
a point
incumbent
of clarification.
Upon good. Absolutely. Republicans have to step up and say this is not acceptable.
Let me do this as a point of clarification. We do know that Voice the Vote is the PAC that paid for the ad. They registered with the state of Michigan in 2004, but they've yet to file a single campaign statement with the state, and that's required by law to show where their monies come from and how they're spent. The group owes $4,000 in state fines. Robert George, we should also note that within the ad, it claims that the Democratic Party leaders have relied on blacks to be, quote, foot soldiers, and that their reward has been a dependency on welfare, high unemployment, and a disproportionate number of black men locked up in prison. All right. Some will say that this is good old fashioned, hard school, heavy swinging politics.
Well, I mean, Kelly is right. It's not just rather repugnant. It's dumb. It's actually dumb tactically for Republicans and the allies of the Republican candidates there who have indeed been trying to reach out in more proactive fashion. I mean, I don't mind making charges that the Democratic Party has taken blacks for granted. And I can show various examples in terms of policies and strategies that might show that. But I mean, I think it's particularly ridiculous, obviously, to go back to Lyndon Johnson, who of all of the three presidents that they mentioned, you can say he actually did the most for black voters in the context of signing the Civil Rights Act, Voting Rights Act, and so forth. It just seems like a rather I can understand this kind of hardball kind of ads in like maybe in the 80s and into the early 90s, but in the context of where politics are in the 21st century, where Republicans are trying to bring in say black religious voters and things like that, it just seems like a rather foolish move.
Here's an interesting point, Marcelo, and I do not indict Dick DeVos here, as we reported, he has denounced this. But often you'll see these kinds of ads taken out by PACs, and the party, Democrat or Republican, will say, oh, we have nothing to do with this, we denounce it. Yet with a wink and a nod, many party officials say, okay, we'll run it through a PAC rather than run it through our association.
Veterans. Yeah.
Yes, it's a bit the Guantanamo Bay of Michigan politics. In other words, it's a mess, and of course, nobody's going to take ownership for this. The point is that this is, you know, bad politics. Nazi imagery paraphernalia won't win votes in U.S. elections. So this is ugly. There is no place for this kind of hatred symbols and images in the political process. This is probably going to hurt Mr. DeVos rather than help him.
And which, what's interesting... go ahead, Robert, real quick.
Well, I was just going to say, it's such a stupid move. One has to wonder if it was somebody, you know, on the other side trying to do that because they would realize it was going to backfire against the Republican candidate.
That's too much twisted in the wind for me, Robert.
Stranger things have happened.
Stranger things have happened. You're right. Marcelo, Robert, and Callie, thank you so much. Greatly appreciated. We wanted to get to a story that talks about... folks who live in low-income housing getting points and then turning those points into gifts by doing the right thing, i.e. attending PTA meetings, getting your kids off to school on time, etc. We'll get to that hopefully tomorrow. Ran out of time this day. We would like to invite the listeners, as always, to comment on what you've heard on our roundtable or any of the stories here. You can do that by calling 202-408-3330, or you can send us an email, log on to npr.org, and click on Contact Us. Be sure to tell us where you're writing from and how to pronounce your name.